this week, on the 2nd of March 1935, a record crowd of 18,080 packed into Plough Lane to see Wimbledon beat HMS Victory 3-0 in the FA Amateur Cup. The naval outfit had caught the public's imagination after initially beating a strong Leytonstone side following four replays in the previous round. But they proved no match for the Dons, who were two up at the break thanks to a strike from prolific striker WW Doc Dowden. Any hopes of another giant Kenny act were ended when Eric Taylor scored a third and the final goal in the 57th minute. Ah, yes. We've been in choppy waters, but things are maybe a bit calmer now, or are they? We're the same old Wombles. We're back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. We traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth. If we win or we lose, we just go on.
Hello, hello, dear listener. Welcome to the show. I am Matt Cooper, and today I'm joined by mon frère, the CEO of Fair Game, Niall Cooper. Hello, Niall. How are you?
Oh, good. How are you, Matty?
All right. Thank you very much. And I'm joined by the stat man himself, our guru with the football knowledge, who I'm introducing this week, Mr. Tall Mark Lewis. Hi, Mark. How are you?
Good evening. Very, very well. Thank you. Yes, we're recording slightly later in the week than normal. Apologies for that. But rounding up three random people who have other responsibilities off the field, as they say, is easier said than done.
It's always a bit tricky. And unfortunately, today we don't have any Dr. Adam Proctor. And we don't have any special guests this week. Although, naturally, we do have the DTB on speed dial. You know, we just talk to them all the time. Yeah, so it's an interesting time for the Dons on the pitch. You know, decent point, I think, away at Mansfield. Mark, I don't know if you've got any thoughts, if we can remember back that far.
Well, I have to, and you'll be very surprised to hear me say this, but I got to like properly reference Wales again, actually, whilst doing this, because as a regular listener to the pod might remember. Now and again, I miss away games because I'm travelling to visit family. So earlier this season, we went to see our daughter who is based in Aberystwyth, which if you've never been there, then it's a beautiful town, but it's not on the way anyway. It's right on the west Welsh coast and takes about 7 hours to get there. So you choose to go when there's an away game. The first away game we went, that we missed because we went to Aberystwyth was Peterborough. And when you visit people away at uni, then, you know, your children, whatever, you're good and diligent and take them to the local supermarket to fill up their larder, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. First time we did this for the Peterborough game, in the time it took us to do a week's food shop, we were 4-0 down in the first half. So I was slightly concerned when timing-wise, last Saturday, as soon as we got into said branch of Aldi, I think it was, other supermarkets are available, in Aberystwyth, we'd suddenly went 1-0 down and then 2-1 down away at Mansfield. And I was suddenly thinking it's going to be that all over again. But it wasn't, and we remembered outscore penalties. So, you know what? I'll take a point. Quite happy with that, as it sounds like it was a bit of a pudding of a pitch and a pudding of a defensive performance as well.
Yes. But I think we take that, and I'm assuming I've been up to Aberystwyth. I was actually looking to go to uni there. It was a long time ago, and I think they've now built a city around it. From when I was there, it was sort of like on the edge of a hill.
It's still on the edge of a hill, but yes, there is a town around the university.
Yeah, they've now built things. But yeah, that's you know, yeah, and I think we take a point. Now we take a point away at Mansfield.
Yeah, I'd take a point away at Mansfield. Yeah. You know, obviously, we'd be lovely to have all three, but we'll take a point.
Yeah. And again, I think there's a few things here. I mean, for me, Tilly I don't know. We have to go back to this at the beginning. We were all a little bit anxious about Tilly coming back because he didn't sign on for us in the first place.
Why were we anxious?
Not
Anxious is probably the wrong word.
no, I
Annoyed that he didn't
annoyed.
stay. Happy that he came back, surely.
I think we were. I think. Well, it's that kind of what's it called? Petulance, jealousy thing that he's gone. He didn't sign for us in the first place, and now he's come back, and it's just like, well, you could have stayed with us in the first place, but now he's just proved himself. I mean, against Bradford, great ball in, which has gone straight the way through, and then brilliant link-up play for his goal against Mansfield. Wonderful, and his connection with Brown was fantastic. That led to the goal. Great strike. So yeah, I mean, it feels like he's the difference. Also, people have noticed it. Reeves obviously has is now on the bench, and Maycock has been doing fantastically well in that position. And having a fit Matty Stevens, again, he got his goal against Bradford and then got the penalty. So he's back up and running. So it does feel like having those people in. What I am interested about is what's happened to Joe Lewis. Do we know anything? Mark, do we know anything about?
No. I mean, all I've seen is a few little updates. We haven't obviously had an update in advance of this weekend's game ahead of Northampton, but the last update that Jackson did ahead of Mansfield was that Lewis, I think, and McCoy Splatt, another one of the forgotten squad, were back in training. The thing about Lewis is he had an injury. He came back. He played only about 50 minutes or so, I think, of the Northampton virtueless trophy defeat, and went off injured again, and so they're probably quite sensibly, I would have thought, a little bit reticent to bring him back unless he's actually had a full bank of training for a considerable period. The interesting thing is when I saw we'd let in a couple of goals against Mansfield early doors, I was convinced that was Bauer, and that was the comments I was making in the WhatsApp group, but it wasn't. Apparently, it was Johnson, which I suppose is fair enough because Johnson's been so solid all season. He's allowed to have the odd off game.
I mean,
Not
it
sure
must
if he's
be.
allowed enough games, to be honest. I mean, that's, but I get your point. I mean, he's been brilliant, hasn't he? We can't deny the fact that Johnson's right up there for being one of the potential players of the year.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think, I mean, he must be knackered because he's just playing all the time. I think people are enjoying the fact that we've got a week off, more than that. I mean, that Northampton game is still annoying me. I don't think there's anything that we there's nothing obviously we can do about it now. It's going to happen. And I think because of the contract with Sky, which is signed as by a group, again, there's nothing we can do. We can, and I'm not sure there's going to be any complaints or anything like that because I think the club probably going to be a little bit worried that there would be sanctions from Sky or something or some other thing if we don't accept it. It just feels really stupid on their part because I think we told Sky this is the situation. God knows why they've done that. And I'm not entirely sure, but I know earlier on people were saying that we don't think there's any trains from Northampton. I'm not entirely sure whether that's true or not. We should look into that. But it's just so annoying. And on a personal note, my daughter has a match around that sort of time. So, she plays Sunday morning football. So it's going to be difficult for me to get there, which is a shame. And I know a lot of other people are going to have trouble, traveling from wherever to get there, not forgetting all these people that are going to be traveling from all over the globe. And there are people, yes, we're a League One club, but we've got this profile internationally. So people are traveling over and it's going to be difficult. I understand that, our fans are doing our best helping out other fans who are traveling in and doing the best they can. But it's just really annoying because I think God knows how many fans we're going to miss from that game. I can't guess, but it's probably going to be the smallest attendance of the season, I'd have thought. There's
I
going to be a
reckon
bit of fans.
Blackpool on Wednesday night might be the smallest attendance of the season in terms of how many fans Blackpool will not bring with them. But no, your points are
Exactly.
completely sensible. There's a proper ecosystem around how professional sport and how amateur sport fits in around everybody's work commitments. And traditionally, people's work commitments are during the week, hybrid or otherwise. But therefore, the weekend, then you might take your children at some point to a youth club or youth sport facility on a Saturday morning. We have Women in Common Foundation activities, for example, on Saturday mornings, and then a lot of other people play on Sunday mornings. And I spent like 5, 6, 7 years taking my son to rugby over lunchtime on a Sunday, which is quite a familiar thing to do and quite easy to be able to set in place when football is when football should be, i.e., Saturday afternoon 3 till 5, Tuesday evening 7:45. The reality is, the TV company, Sky, TNT, whoever it is, don't care. They've paid their money, and they therefore think, fine, I'll have my pound of flesh, and if I want to have the game, whenever I want to have the game, that's what I'll do. The reality also shows, in terms of different priorities and how the season pans out, Northampton, having played a three-quarter strength team, but at least a three-quarter strength team, to beat us in the last round of the Virtue, then made 9 changes because they're right in the pits of despair, having played an extra game in the bottom four. I think they're second from bottom now. So they made 9 changes for the Virtue Trophy game, and lost to Luton. They shouldn't be in it in the first place. And now Luton are falling over themselves and getting very, very excited about the fact that they're at Wembley and not even in any way half embarrassed, let alone completely shamefacedly embarrassed about the fact they lost fair and square. Obviously, Swindon broke the rules and therefore were kicked out, and therefore Luton are coming through again. But Northampton are desperate, as in fact Doncaster did the same thing, because Doncaster were in the Northern semi-final as well. And they also lost. And the Doncaster fans don't care either. Doncaster had 5,000 there for their Virtues semi-final against Stockport. So Stockport against Luton will be the final, which I'm sure is great for those two clubs, and they've got decent fan bases, relatively speaking. But actually, no, TV don't care. And actually, for Stockport and Luton, both of whom I would have thought have playoff aspirations, Stockport probably much more realistically than Luton, they've got to rearrange games again, which is even more frustrating.
Because our game against them has been rearranged. It's just so tedious, this whole thing. And it just proves that fans are, right down at the bottom of the list when things are being considered. I mean, because another thing that's come up today is they've expanded the playoff, in the championship, haven't they? So that's now an
I mean, that's pulling
expanded
the rugby
format.
league example, isn't it? That's just like, they're trying to get more money out of everything. It's just kind of like, oh, just, I get it. It makes it a bit more interesting, but
How do you get it? What they're trying to do is get more TV subscriptions, playing more pointless games. It's rewarding mediocrity to finish eighth in the table and closer to mid-table and then potentially get promoted over
someone was
someone who
saying,
finishes third. I mean, come on.
someone was saying that, the chances are, as sides, like I think Sheffield United or whatever, have lost like 13 odd games, and could this season, and could possibly get into that situation. So it is ridiculous. I mean, I think that's the system they use in the National League as well, isn't it? It is that system that they use. The same deal.
And that's a complete mess as well.
And so, I mean, I've always thought that League One feels to me like the hardest league to stay in, because you've got so many sides that go up and so many sides that drop down. You've got the playoffs and all that sort of stuff. I mean, if that happened in League One, we'd be in with a shout of getting into a playoff situation like that. And I think that there was a situation in the conference last year where York, who'd finished miles ahead of everyone else in third, they lost out. And what happened is their argument being that they hadn't played any games, because the way that it works is that the sides who are near the bottom of that, who finished eighth or seventh, they have to play and then play again. And by the time they get to the final, they've got all those, they've got all that sort of experience. Whereas other sides are just waiting around. They're not playing any football. Anyhow, it's just it just annoys me that they keep playing, they keep messing around with these things without any consultation of the fans, those people that are impacted, and it's all about money. Hey ho. And I guess talking of money, it brings us into the big thing, and everyone who's a Don's Trust member, so which is going to be all season ticket holders, unless you've opted out, will have received the voting for going to 50.01. And there is a bit of a, if you just go for, there's a bit of a timeline here. So the first thing to say is that there's a drop-in session at Plough Lane this Monday, the 9th of March at 6 p.m. in the Legends Lounge. And then it's a two-stage voting process. So you've got the SGM 1 is on the 23rd of March, and then on the 8th of April is the SGM 2. And I think the first one is around sort of like changing some of the structures, because at the moment, no one can earn more than 15% of the club. I can't have 15% of the shares, and they want to increase that to 25%. Is one of the things, and then it's just, and then the second vote is to sort of like just is to agree it. So it's almost like a double ticks thing. You need to agree the first thing, and then agree the second thing. But the important thing to say to people here is that you've got until the 23rd of March to make your vote. Read all the information. It is on the actual Wimbledon website, afcwimbledon.co.uk/the-dons-trust. But you'll find it if you go onto the Wimbledon website. It's interesting that it's actually on the club website, not the Don's Trust board, although there is a link to it there. But it's all on the club website with all the information. There's a prospectus, there's frequently asked questions, and so on. It's, you know, and I know that there are concerns on, you know, one something I've seen is that people feel they're being slightly strong-armed, because it's not subtle. it says vote for it. Otherwise, you know, the chances are we might go bankrupt or have to really decrease our spending. And other people are saying, well, you know, there's nothing here in terms of a vote of whether we want to sell up the club completely. Now, on that one, I would say that recent polls have shown that people, a majority of fans, want to remain fan-owned. And also, I don't think anyone that has stood for the DTB on a platform of setting up the club has ever been elected. And I wish more people, in actual fact, with that view would stand, and there would be a proper debate. I think would be interesting. But yeah, Mark, I don't know what your thoughts are on all of this so far.
Well, I mean, I take your point with regards to, you know, using the language about being strong on, but obviously we had James and Angus on the pod last week, and we suggested at the time that they go on other pods. And I've heard other pods say that apparently they are going to have representatives on there, so that's good. Get the voice out, get the information out as to as wide an audience as possible, because we're well aware that this podcast doesn't speak for too many women and fans, let alone the whole spectrum. But realistically, they did also say in the public meeting a few weeks back, said this as well, that, you know, financial forecasts didn't look great if they 50+1 didn't pass. So actually, and we live in a black and white world, so yes, everyone's entitled to have their opinion on whether or not 50+1 is the right way forward. And we know that obviously Niall in particular, I can't believe you've been this quiet so far, isn't necessarily of that camp.
He's biding his time.
I'm sure he is.
But, I mean, the way I'm at with it, I mean, like, you know, if we're going to get me in, is that...
No, I wasn't. I was in the middle of a sentence, but carry on.
Yeah. you go.
No, all I was going to say was... Actually, sometimes you need to be clear. You need to put words and messages in a very straightforward way, so that actually, and they admitted that previously they hadn't necessarily got the messaging particularly straightforward or clear, people are under no doubts as to what the scenario is. And then they can make their particular choice, but at least they can't say, well, I didn't really understand.
Yeah, and now before I bring you in, this is the lines that they've given, which is... throughout, it's sort of like it says this: internal forecasts show that without new investment model, the club's professional viability is at risk within 18 months. We currently rely on football fortune player sales to cover a £20 million annual operating loss. So they're being quite you know, they're saying that we have, this is no, there's no choice. This is the only choice that we have. Niall, I'm sure you've got opinions on this, and I know that there's the thing about we haven't sold being fan owned particularly well, but it feels like this is a crunch time.
Before Niall comes in, could I just sensibly but actually necessarily correct what you just said? What it actually says is while match day revenues are at a record high, football inflation has created a £2 million annual operating gap, not a £20 million, which is what you just said.
Oh, did I? Sorry, I didn't mean to.
Slightly
I'm getting even more.
small difference.
I'm making it sound even worse. It's a £2 million annual operating loss. Yeah.
Still quite important, but still quite significant, but not quite as
Not
significant.
that. No.
All right. So where I'm at with this is, I think the number one thing by far and away for me is boats. And I think, right, because whether you are pro or anti, what I want is to make sure that we reach that percentage, was it 50% threshold that we need. That for me is the most important thing. So if anybody is listening, spread the word. Just say what the most important thing is, vote. I'd go to I'd encourage the DTB to spam us as much as possible on that. I'd like to see stalls out at the home game saying, right, just do that. I'd like to sit on the Jumbotron, right? Literally go 5 minutes before kickoff, get your phone out now, click on that link and vote. That's where I want a full, I want absolutely everybody to vote. That for me is the most important thing. Because the worst thing would be if we had fell just short of the necessary turnout and the vast majority of those people were pro going down to 50 plus one. We need to be in a situation where the vote counts. That is my thing. Whether you agree or disagree with it, and I sway in it, and you all know from last week's podcast that my entire principles went down to get humble crumble in the food zone, and I'm voting 50 plus one, right? That's kind of where we're at. I think let's make sure we vote. Let's encourage everybody to vote. Let's get in a situation where people are on their phones on Sunday, opening it up and making, if they haven't voted, they're voting. That's where I think is the be all and end all for us right now. We can't be in a situation where the vote isn't legitimate because it hasn't passed the threshold. That's my number one thing. I'm not going to go into the arguments about whether it's the right thing or the wrong thing. I'm stuck between my head and my heart on that now. My heart says not in a million years should we go down below that level. And those evil DTB people are busy messing with my head, and I'm not very happy with them for that, or where I'm at with that. But that's it. That's kind of my view and my sense on all of it.
It's so just so everyone is clear on this, in terms of the voting. So we must have more than 50% of the total membership must cast a vote. And I think our membership limit is around 7,500, 8,000. So that's a lot of people that need to vote. Of that 75, of the 50% that vote, 75% must vote in favour for it to be carried. And in terms of representation, they say that 75% in favour must represent at least 40% of our entire membership. So there's a lot there, but the first threshold is we need to make sure that 50% of the total membership must vote. And now that's the most important thing. Voting is the most important thing. And then it's then we go from there. So
It is
I'm
worth
so
mentioning that the second vote didn't actually happen last time, didn't need to happen because they didn't reach that
They
appropriate
didn't reach
threshold
that
first time.
threshold. Yeah. So they say, so, and it breaks down into first meeting. So then they say in the first meeting, so this is for the one on the 23rd of March, 50% of the total membership must vote, 75% of the voting, and votes in favour must be at least 40% of the total membership. So that's what's needed. In the second one, which is the confirmationary meeting in April, 50% of the total membership must vote, and 2/3 of those voting must be in favour. So it's really important. It's really important to vote. It's really important to have a look through. One of the things that they have put here, and Niall, you might be interested in this. There's a little a table in the prospectus, and it goes, the choice and the vote, your choice, your vote. This is a critical moment for our democracy. We're asking for the flexibility to grow while we remain a majority fan-owned club. So then you've got three columns, one which says the future, one which talks about the current model, one which talks about being 50.01 majority. So it's the first question is who's in control? And for both, they say it's our members. For the second question, they go, who owns the stadium? Again, they say it's our members. They say the maximum individual stake at the current model, it's 15%. For majority, it's flexible and it unlocks partners, is what they says. Then they say realistic ambition. They say for the 75 plus one, it's a short-term viability. If we go to 50.01, it's long-term sustainable growth. And then they ask the question about Plough Lane, our name, our badge and our colours. And under both models, they say those are protected. So basically, in that table, it seems to suggest that there's no impact, that we still remain, we still have the biggest voice, we're still majority owned. The only difference being that there's more flexibility in the 50.1, there's more flexibility to unlock long-term partners and there's more sustainable growth. So Niall, I think, do you know what, Niall? I think it's really important for you to sort of like say what you're concerned about going under 75%, because, you know, people are thinking, well, what's, for looking at this, I'd be silly to vote against it.
It's really hard because I can see the arguments. I really can. It's just, I have this nagging fear of who next. So if we give up and we're down to 50 plus one, then the opportunity for that other half to become kind of coalesced with somebody who doesn't agree with fan ownership and doesn't agree with that. That's my concern. It's a totally principled one about that. I obviously love the idea of being 100% fan owned, right? That would be my ideal, and I'd love to be in a situation where we are. I honestly, it's weird, and I think the DTB and this document have done a brilliant job not convinced how I'm going to vote.
Yeah, well, that's a major step for you.
Big thing. Yeah. Big thing for me. This is my heart and my head. My heart says, no way you vote for 50 plus one. But I get the whole financial arguments and I see it all. All I know is that I will vote.
Yeah. I mean,
I imagine it will totally depend on what I'm in. If, like I go there on Sunday and, I don't know,
they've got crumble.
James puts an apple crumble in my hand and I'm in trouble.
Yeah. The other thing to say, Niall, well, hopefully they might have some crumble sorted for you. The other thing to say is that they have got an FAQs section, which is really quite comprehensive. I would encourage everyone to have a look at it. One of the questions, Niall, they have asked, and I think this is for you, it says, can an investor sell their shares to a bad actor? And I think that they're talking about, like, you know, a bad investor rather than, I don't know, Jude Law. So, you know, as an example of a bad actor. So, and it says here that our articles of association, this is the answer to it, our articles of association include preempting rights. Any shareholder wishing to sell must first offer those shares back to existing shareholders, including the trust, at a fair price. Additionally, all share transfers require board approval. So there is safeguardings now. They are putting safeguardings in place about who next, I think, is the big thing.
You know, I'm wavering. I just say, I go back to it. I just want people to vote.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's so, it. You know, that's where I'm at. So.
Yeah. I mean, I'll obviously be voting for, and I think it's and some of the rumours you hear going around sound quite exciting, and what they're looking to do with it as well looks quite exciting.
Come on, spread some rumors, spread some rumors. I haven't heard any of
Well,
these.
no, I mean, like, just what we heard the other day, like it's just quite interesting, isn't it? About, the possibility of ex players being involved in it, and who else might be involved. I think could be quite interesting. And again, I think the way it works is that if we are setting up that amount, that the club have to come back to us, and we have to agree that sale. So we have to. So if Robbie Earl and his friends come forwards with a deal, we have to the we the membership have to agree it. But what they're looking for is obviously the first thing is to secure EFL viability. It will help to invest in the playing squad, protect our academy, support our women's team, and invest in infrastructure. So I think the most important thing is that, because people talk about this kicking the can down the road, and it isn't really like that. What we're actually saying here is that if we have this investment in, we're going to invest in things that are sustainable, that will allow us to have more funding going forwards. So if it invests in, like, developing Plough Lane, for instance, is one of those things. If that can increase capacity by even 1,000, so, like, not having having a bigger temporary stand somewhere, for instance, that would bring in more money. So it's actually any investment that goes into the club is about us investing financially in the future. It's not just about throwing it all at the playing squad, which I think is really important.
One of the things I actually wanted to raise is to support that. It doesn't naturally just have to do, however, with infrastructure in the stadium, which clearly, as and when appropriate, will need maintaining and updating and improving and enlarging if at all possible. But equally, if I look at some of the things I've seen online, which I'm now trying to find information about, relating to our current academy and our current under-18s. Now, our under-18s just got through to two different national cup finals.
Yep.
Oh, it's mad, isn't it? It's
One
brilliant.
of which is the Youth Alliance, where they're playing Blackpool in a few weeks' time. The other one is the Professional Development League Cup, where I think they're going to be playing Luton. And this is with the existing academy and the existing setup that we've got. Now, we've seen, if you hunt around enough, relatively quickly, you can see enough examples of players. Or names, because they're barely players that anyone's really come across, who have been already spotted and scouted and acquired out of our academy before they get anywhere near the first team squad. Leo Castelline being an example of people would have heard, who then went obviously on to Chelsea and then ended up now at Middlesbrough in the Championship, which may or may not get us any money if Middlesbrough might happen to get promoted. But the existing academy with people like Omari Sealy, who was on the bench a few games ago, are doing particularly well. And but the better the facilities that we have there, the better the opportunities that we have there, the better the finances are there to be able to invest in coaches, for example, then the more products we're going to get through that will be the next Ogs and the next Sasu. And we won't have to keep talking about Ogs and Sasu as the only examples of people who've broken through.
Yeah, I Mark, I think that's good, because there was someone just recently, wasn't there? I can't remember their name, who's been sold on for a six-figure amount.
Who
So
is in the under 18 thing, and that is something that's gone line somewhere. Bournemouth, I believe,
yeah,
have acquired him
Bournemouth, yeah.
supposedly for about six for a 6-figure sum, which could be just 100 grand.
Yeah.
Someone like Justin Clark played a couple of games in the Virtue Trophy last year and is now tearing it up for Everton under 18s. But when these people then properly break through, it's almost completely ignored about exactly where their origins were.
Yeah.
Patrick Roberts is now playing for Birmingham in the Championship regularly, having played for Sunderland in the Championship regularly. He was a Wimbledon Academy product. He ended up being part of the whole thing with Milton Keynes.
And the most fa I mean, Jack Redoni is tearing up at Coventry, who are top of the Championship at the moment. And we're not entirely sure whether there's a, if he gets sold, if there's another, if we benefit from that. We don't know that. I think that by all accounts, Jack Curry's doing well at Oxford, even though it looks like they might be getting relegated. But I think he's been doing well. He might be being sold on. And the next thing is Kai Jennings. So Kai has been doing brilliantly at Sutton, scored a screamer for them the other night. And but people again are saying that he's been scouted all the time. There are people scouting him, so we might never see him in our first team.
Or, of course, that is just internet speak by his agent.
Of course, I would
like to hope that we have Jennings under contract at the very least for next year.
Yeah.
Obviously, what he has done is he's proven his abilities two levels below where we are. And yes, he'll definitely want to come into the first team. No, he's definitely not a winger. I heard somebody say the other day that both Jennings and Sidwell, who are both on loan as younger players in non-league, are both wingers, which is just not true. And likewise, Foyo's also not a winger. If you see the goal that Foyo scored as a striker, as a poacher in the box, from a Jennings corner,
yeah.
Not only could Jennings potentially replace Reeves in the first team squad next year, but it appears we finally might have somebody who can take corners.
I think we're really hopeful for Jennings, aren't we? And also, it's great that Foyo's got back on the pitch and scoring. So really pleased about that, and just hope that continues, because again, it would be great for us to have another striker in.
Yeah, and fair play, that was a Hartlepool away on a Tuesday night, so that really is the proper litmus test as to whether or not you can do it, so to speak. Here's a random thing I found when I was just scouting around for stats this week. It's a list of teams that have scored the most goals from set pieces in each different division. And apparently this counts as in the goal, for example, that Mate Stevens scored, the little back heel, cheeky back heel, a couple of weeks back against Bradford. That would count as a goal from a corner, even though it didn't immediately come from a corner. So most goals from set pieces, naturally enough, as you would expect, it's Lincoln with 20. Fewest goals, Leighton Orient with 7. And apparently we've scored 12, which puts us in like 9th position for that particular stat in the actual division, which is just bizarre, joint 9th.
I mean, again, you know, probably if they did it for the Premier League, it would be Arsenal, and all their goals are from set pieces.
But who cares? If you score goals...
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I saw things online last night. We don't talk about Premier League stuff on here, but people are bitching about how Arsenal play football, but they win games. Yeah. I seem to remember they bitched about us quite a lot back in the mid-90s, but you win games, you know?
Well, successful that's it.
Teams, I mean, Dennis, to win, you know?
Dennis Wise, you know, famously contributed 75% of our goals. That's what they said, wasn't it? And most of those would have been from free kicks. Winning games, man, that's what football's about. Don't, you know, start messing about with it. Winning's the most important thing. It's interesting that our academy, you know, if we can get that investment in our academy already, it's been successful, which is fantastic. It's going to be a debate that rumbles on for the next 2 or 3 weeks. I think the DTB have done a good job with this, and I think, you know, have a look through, because it's quite clear in what they're looking to do. It's quite, and the prospectus is quite clear. The FAQs are quite clear. So just have a look through on that.
I'm not sure if Monday's meeting is going to be online, but again, as many people as are able to get to Monday's meeting and then the meeting on the 23rd as well, the better, really.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, I think the difference that the DTB have made this time around and the clarity of their comms is really significant. I think they've definitely improved and up their game on that. So full credit out to the DTB for that work and what they're doing. It's difficult to make something that is quite techie really understandable. And I think they've done a good job in that. And, full credit to them. Again, it's another example of, you know, what I think is a really well-functioning board at the moment. So, you know, congrats to all concerned. You know, as I say, I just want that crumble, and your world's, you know, you've totally persuaded me in absolutely all things. But other than
that. You're so easily bought, honestly, Cooper. What's wrong with you?
I know, really is. Anyhow, other bits and bobs that are going around, interestingly, tomorrow night, because we're recording this on Thursday, so it does mean that other podcasts can't slag this episode off, because they'll be coming out at the same time as us. But on Friday, and who knows when this is going to come out, to be honest with you, because we're going to send it over to Dr. Adam Proctor. It could come out before the Northampton game, afterwards, who knows? But Friday the 6th, either you'll listen to it and you're going to go in that evening, or it'll have happened. It's Meet the Manager, but also with Ovid Leonhardsen. I mean,
oh no, what a legend. What a legend he is.
Absolutely.
You know what his most impressive stat is? I'm sure I told you this a lot before.
No, come on, man. What is his most
Leo's most impressive stat is not how many games he played for Norway or played for Norway in the World Cup, I think, or that he played for us, or that he scored on his debut at Selhurst in the last minute to seal a 4-3 win after Andy Townsend got sent off for Villa. That was a great game. But his most impressive stat is he and I not only share a birth date, but we are exactly the same age to the day.
Wow. And it's like talking cheese, isn't it? It's so hard to tell the difference between Mark Lewis and Øyvind Leonhardsen. Øyvind Leonhardsen, who must be like about 5'7", and
if that.
Mark, who has the prefix tall. Other than that, it's like twins. It's like twins, the film.
If it had been your height, he could probably got a few more goals, to be honest with you. Got for some headers.
Exactly. But I'm now wondering, so obviously Leonhardsen's DeVito, and Schwarzenegger, wasn't it? Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah. Very much like that.
Pop quiz. Leonhardsen played 402 league games in his career.
Yep.
Scored 68 goals. Who did he score? Who did he play most games for? Out of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 teams he played for?
Of course, I'm going to go for us, but it's either, other than that, it's going to be Spurs, then Liverpool. I would go us, Spurs, Liverpool.
I would go us, then is it Mold or something like that, you know, in Norway?
Correct. 78 for Wimbledon and 64 for Molde. Who did he score the most goals for?
It's got to be United Dons.
No.
Molde.
20 goals in 63 appearances for Rosenborg, who we signed him from.
Yep.
And 13 in 78 for Wimbledon.
How many times did he play for Liverpool or Spurs?
7 goals in 37 for Liverpool and 7 goals in 54 for Tottenham. Mm. And 3 goals in 19 games for Aston Villa. I'd forgotten he played for them. Apparently, we only sold him for £3.5 million, which in modern day money seems absolute pittance.
I know.
That's quite a lot in those days.
I'm really pleased he's back. Unfortunately, I can't get along. But I think it'll be brilliant. It'd be great if it's videoed as well, because I know that so obviously there's Meet the Manager as well. And I think that, you know, this is the start of the international weekend, which would have, you know, culminated with the game at 3 o'clock on Saturday against Northampton. But it's now been extended, thanks, Sky, to Sunday. So, woohoo! I'm assuming that all of our international fans are going to be there tomorrow night, and then Saturday, I don't know, go for a kickabout at Wimbledon Common.
There is an opportunity, and I don't want to make too many promises that we can't deliver, but there is an opportunity that next week's episode may feature, neither of you know this yet, actually, and may feature, if we have the technology, an interview with an international Womble who is coming over for the game on
Sunday. That's brilliant. I mean, it's just...
Who may have featured on the pod before.
Yeah. We've only got one international guest.
What is she missing? What are our poor students not having because she's here? She's clearly bunking school again.
Yeah.
You know, we love her, and we'll definitely vouch for the fact she looked very ill when we saw her and definitely had a cough. At all. We'll vouch for it, promise.
Bless her.
I mean, live interview with our American listener would be neither here nor there.
I can't. I mean, I just feel... I genuinely just feel for her what's going on over there. Anyhow,
that's why she's coming over. Yeah, maybe she's coming to try and stay and not get a return flight.
To find some sanity. Not a Wimbledon.
You know what? Actually, going to home games, it's so much more exciting than it used to be. You know,
And when we say it used to be, we're talking about like 2 months ago.
Well, yeah, exactly. Not very long ago, but you know, Reading 3-2, Bradford 3-1.
Yeah,
and actually, we're now coming up having, you know, got through your Bradfords and your Cardiffs and so on. We're now coming into a run of games. Mansfield, two home games in a row. Northampton, then Blackpool. Stevenage away, and then Leyton Orient at home. So, three out of those four games, all three of those home games, in fact, are against teams currently below us in the table. In fact, currently in the bottom six.
Yeah, those are the sides we hate playing against. I hate
Well,
those. Yeah, really. Do. I mean,
potentially.
Northampton. I mean, it's going to be really interesting how they set up against us. And haven't they? They've beaten us in the Virtue Cup. They beat
They've
us
beaten us
at their
twice.
place. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's going to be. I mean, it's going to be a. It's going to be a really tough game, and because they're fighting for their lives, so they're just going to. They're going to up their thing. So we have to do that as well. And that's the thing. When you start to feel a bit more comfortable, we have to make sure that we're on it.
This is almost only going to come back to bite me in the arse, but the interesting thing about commissioning articles for the program, as I've done recently from Northampton fans and Orient fans, and also Blackpool fans, is they're all delaying submitting the articles because quite potentially between when they submit the article and when the actual game is played, which is usually, less than a week or so in advance, their managers may end up being turfed out anyway, which obviously would change the flavour of the article completely.
Yeah. Oh man. Anyhow, it's gonna be fun and games on Sunday. One other thing I want to come back to is just because there's so much news coming at the moment, season tickets again is the big thing. And it's really, really tricky, the early bird offer, because that really benefits people who actually can afford to make that payment now. Because the early bird offer doesn't count if you're paying by direct debit, for instance. It's if you
That's the
pay a,
same as last year.
yeah, I'm not saying, but it's just one of those things. So it means that if you've got the money in the bank, you can do it. Now, usually the people that can do that are those who are more well off, to be honest with you. So how do we make sure that those people that are, this is a cost of living crisis. It's really difficult. And I'm going to say, I mean, I won't be able to afford an early bird ticket. I won't be able to afford that all up front.
No, neither will I.
I'll have to wait and then pay in installments. So I'm being kind of punished because I can't afford that up front. Whereas, those people that can afford it are going to be those with better money. And I understand we need to get the money into the club. I completely get the argument for it, but it's really difficult, especially when some prices have gone up quite a lot. It's really, really tricky. So I think we need to be careful about how we do this, because people are going to feel that they can't afford it, and then you change the demographic, you change who's coming along to games, and it starts to become more elite. The big complaint about the World Cup is it will probably sell out. Like, most of the tickets to the World Cup will sell out, but they won't sell out to football fans. Like
Yeah,
your,
exactly.
you know, the fans of, like from the, I can't remember, Ivory Coast or some of the other countries. I mean, the people going along to that will be those from the wealthy families in those countries, not the football fans who are on the ground. So you lose a whole load of, like in Mexico, even, or Canada. I mean, how many people can afford go to some of those games? So it starts to become a privilege to go and watch football, rather than it's for the people on the ground. So I don't know if you know what the answer is necessarily, but there needs to be something which says, there's some sort of offers which are more affordable for those people that are suffering at the moment, and people are. So if that early bird rate could even include, direct debits, that would make life a little bit easier as well. And it's not, I know it's not a huge difference between those two prices, but it does make a difference.
I
The
think
problem
there's a
with it
couple.
is
There's,
that
go on now.
the problem with it is that there's a budgeting cycle, isn't it? So that's the
Yeah, I
issue.
get that. I
And
get
cash flow
that.
cycle, and that's the
Yeah.
whole issue that they have
Yeah.
at the start. So, the whole of the football ecosystem between clubs and all the rest of it, and all the kind of common creditors, all the rest of it, are all built around a big injection of cash across the football system in July and August, because that's also when the payments come through for your solidarity payments from the Premier League, your parish payments, all of that, all hitting that month. So the entire football system, which is also why you see all the transfer fees, by the way, at that point, because that's when all the money starts splashing around. After that, there's hardly cash flow is all about attendances. So that's why there's a massive leap during that period.
I'd actually argue it's May and June, not even July and August, because May and June obviously is the time where you're either going to get no home games unless you're involved in the playoffs, or certainly very few, and then you're going to be reliant on things going on in the close season, potential pitch hire and so on, which is not going to be anything like as much, in terms of revenue coming in on a week by week or month by month basis. A couple of points I would raise to Matt's sensible summary of that. Number one, unfortunately, football has been gentrified. I mean, I know this as now as a grown-up bloke, but as a family, we moved into Wimbledon from Wayne's Park in the very early 70s when I was very, very small, and my parents bought a three-bedroom house for £18,000. No idea what that was in relation to, salaries and so on at the time. But when they sold it was in the property boom, property dip, sorry, at the end of the 80s. Their same house now, which is 7, 8 minutes walk from central Wimbledon, and between Wimbledon Chase, for those people who know the area, that house will now go for over £1 million. So that whole area has been gentrified, even down to the other side of Hayden's Road and so on around the football stadium itself, which, frankly, it's been a shithole for decades and decades and decades, is a little better than it was, thanks actually really to the fact that you've got a football team and thousands of people coming in to that area on a regular basis. So likewise, I don't know what Earlsfield was like in the 70s and 80s, but I suspect it wasn't quite as affluent as it is nowadays, and it didn't cost, £7 something a pint as it does now in the Alex or in the Leather Bottle in Earlsfield. So the demographic has changed. Is it great? Is that great? No, absolutely not. Should people who are, on income support or the equivalent, who are not necessarily earning larger amounts of money that people who would live in Wimbledon nowadays are, should they have benefits to be able to, or opportunities or some type of preferential option to go to games or have get season tickets? Of course they should. But the reality on a supply and demand basis is, you can't compare us to a Doncaster. I remember going to Doncaster away. They had seven or eight individual blocks of their stadium completely unused on a match day because they got a 20,000 capacity. We've only got a just under 9,000 capacity. Therefore, we can't make our season ticket prices. And equally, we don't actually know, we can't guarantee right now whether we'll be playing League One or League Two football. This time last year, people were complaining about the season ticket prices that went up between those two seasons, and saying it would just about be palatable if we got into League One, which eventually we did, but at the time it was far from certain that would happen. So economically, it's difficult. Economically, all the different other running costs that we have in the club are going up that much more, as we all know, on a day-to-day basis. But football is a drug, so to speak. And so we individually will choose or otherwise to pay more money for these things. I mean, we're still getting, I don't know what the cost is to be a mascot, for example, but we're still getting five or six different individual people being mascots every game, which obviously is good commercial money. And we're still getting regular income on the kit sponsors. The kit sponsor dinner was happening recently, and that kit sponsorship thing has gone up to £400 a season from about 300, which was a considerable jump at the beginning of this current season that's about to finish. Basic economics, unfortunately.
I mean, I guess this is completely and utterly impractical, but if you tied season tickets to earnings would be quite interesting, but I don't, it's completely impractical. And then
But
there's
then
also other
you're
questions as
not
well.
tying, national living wage to earnings
Yeah,
or
no, it's
fuel costs or
I know.
general maintenance costs of the season of the stadium, unfortunately.
I know. There's you can't.
There's loads of arguments about this, about what you should do in terms of season tickets, and I've seen lots of arguments about the longevity of it. Fair Game's done a financial paper on this, and it's like actually where you're at is a lower season ticket price actually isn't massively detrimental because you get the longevity of a season of a club of a fan. The issue we've got slightly is that we sell out our ground. So our issue is that, you know, this is why I go, when we talk about the investment and the 50 plus one argument, is that I think that definitely has to go into ground, increasing the capacity of the ground, because that's at the point where you then make the decisions that you're talking about in terms of season ticket prices much more realistic, because a club is long-term sustainable with affordable season tickets. That's the reality. But we live in a short-term market where actually to compete, we need to have higher season tickets. What that does mean is that if it goes peak tong for us at any point, we're more likely to lose people because they're not interested. And you don't actually fill it because you've lost people who've just kind of lost interest in football. So having a lower price season ticket actually makes long-term sustainability, but we've got a ground to fill.
Yeah, exactly. And that's it. So it is. I mean, it's basic economics. I completely get it.
So like Bradford City are probably in a place of being more sustainable because their season tickets prices are really cheap, but they've got a ground that means they can do that.
There's some other clubs in League Two who have taken desperate measures to try and give away thousands and thousands of tickets for free in a desperate attempt to try and get people into their, I don't know, I don't even know what you call it, to be honest with you.
A wankel dome?
Some horrendous thing.
The only time that particular stadium that we're talking about in Buckinghamshire has been nothing close to full was for a rugby match.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with football. And even giving all those free tickets away, they're still going to end up with a capacity of about, capacity in inverted commas, an attendance of about 15,000.
But because people are going to realise they have to get to this horrible place, and you'll feel nauseous, so you're just you wouldn't even go in. Anyhow, on brighter news, not so we've had an upturn. The men's team have had an upturn recently, but the women's team had an upturn. So won last week. So out of the relegation zone at the moment. Big game on Saturday, and Mark, you can help me because of your Welsh connections.
Gwalia,
on
which I think is like Welsh for something.
Good, excellent. Thanks for clearing that up. Anyhow, they are currently below, so it's a big game. So if we can take points there, it will help. But I think we've been bringing in a few players over the last month.
Gwalia is the archaic Welsh name for Wales. There you go.
There you go. So anyhow, we're playing all of Wales on in our next match.
That is a bit tough, isn't it? I mean, the entire country.
I think
South London is its own state, own country, and I often talk about it. And I'll just very briefly touch on this. It was World Culture Day today, and my youngest daughter went in wearing, she had an option. There's lots of different nationalities, as you know, in our family. She wore a T-shirt that said South London as her World Culture Day.
You live in Kent.
Wow. Well, I don't even know where to go with that.
But I bet what she didn't do, because obviously this is entirely inappropriate, was go in with a T-shirt.
Where was she born? South London. What football team does she support? The Mighty Dons.
Was she born in St. George's?
No, that was just
being
nice.
She's born south of the river.
Listen.
Sorry, I'm
before we start getting to this shenanigans.
I was just going to point out, way back in the day, and I remember wearing this when we managed to bunk into a plough lane and have a kickabout, the old plough lane, is some wonderful person, and I'd like to say it was Lou Cotton Kelly, but I'm not sure whether it was actually Lou, got T-shirts printed, which were basically a... listeners can't see what I'm now trying to do with. A map of London with the River Thames in the middle, and words. Know what the words are.
Yeah. Let's not go down that route. But yeah, it was a good T-shirt.
That was a very 1980s T-shirt, although it was produced in the 1990s, I think.
Doug Hammond that did that T-shirt.
Excellent.
Other bits of news for the parish. Marcus Brown has been voted, is being nominated for February's PFA League One Player of the Month. So have a look on the website. Vote for Brown, who has been fantastic. So yeah, so he's up for that nomination. So that would be great to get him in there. I think also
you can only vote once because you have to register your email address.
Yeah. I think.
So go and recruit yourself with lots of email addresses and
Vote as many times as you can.
I mean, he's up against someone from Plymouth, someone against Marriott from Reading, Sam Dolby from Bolton, Rob Street from Lincoln, and somebody else from Lincoln whose name I can't
Whatever.
pronounce. So
I've
that
seen
may be a
against my Lincoln
popularity
vote.
contest.
And also, what else is going on? Yeah, so there's I think you can vote now. I don't know if the vote's closed for our player of the month and goal of the month. They were out on socials, so have a look at that. Vote for them. It's always quite fun to have a look back on that, especially when there's more than like two goals to vote for, which is quite cool. The other thing to say is the on-cycle challenge is happening, and our friend of the show, Mickey Haswell, is leading on that. So that's happened as well. Again, you can find out more information about that on the club site.
I believe friend of the show, John Scales, is also participating in that as well.
Yeah, so I'm hearing, and I see that Damien Francis is part of it as well. Not friend of the show yet, but hey, who knows? It's only a matter of time, yeah?
I haven't asked him, to be honest. So, to be fair.
Yeah, exactly.
Game on, Niall, game on.
Yeah. You know, we talk to anyone. Naturally, we talk to the board all the time.
Of course, we do. They're on speed dial, Matt. I don't know if you
Yeah,
mentioned
exactly.
that.
That's what I say. They're on
Just
speed dial.
for all the other podcasts, just so they know that's the way how we operate. So obviously, if you want the kind of latest,
That's right. We're
other podcasts are available, and we have told the board to go on the other podcasts as well. He
Have
repeats.
we? Who said that?
Yes, I
Other
did. I did
podcasts.
earlier
Other
in this pod, and also last week.
podcasts are available. Man, you've got to work on your marketing skills.
Didn't say you had to listen to them. It's like they are available.
Dear me. Oh, okay. I want to end. You know what? Another thing we need to talk about at some point. The great work that Wimbledon in sport and history are doing, because
Oh yeah,
it's
I'm loving the look of these two events. The one obviously on this weekend, brilliant. And then like that 2016 squad, oh, that'd be ace.
yeah. That's right. They're getting the 2016 squad together again, so that's going to be absolutely fantastic. And we were in the museum because the game was delayed, wasn't it? The Bradford game was delayed by half an hour, so I took a chance to have a look around the museum again. And honestly, people, go and have a look. It is absolutely fantastic. And if you can check out the Wimbledon in Sporting History website, they do some brilliant work. So, absolutely fantastic.
I
Okay,
tell you,
chaps.
I've just been at the National Football Museum in
Oh
Manchester,
yes.
and I've got to say that the display and the way the Wish guys have presented the museum is brilliant, and it would be the best exhibit, and apart from being Wimbledon, the way it's presented, the way it's done, the amount of stuff in there, it's awesome. So definitely get a chance, go to the museum, go into the club shop, go to the museum, look at it. Big up to all the Wish guys. It's brilliant. And, there is stuff in the National Football Museum about Wimbledon, but frankly, what we have dwarfs that. And I think it's better than any of the exhibits I've seen up there. So awesome. Top, top, top job, guys.
It is absolutely fantastic. All right then. Oh no. Talking of the fair game, the conference is coming up soon. When's it?
24th and 25th of March in Manchester, National Football Museum. Day one's now sold out, which is awesome. We've got stuff on looking at Hillsborough, sports washing, club ownership, loads of cool panels and reports. Been looking at the data that's just dropped on how good are the owners of all the clubs in the top five divisions. So I've got really good data on all of that. I can tell you, well, I can't tell you any of it because it's all secret at the moment, but I've got all of that. We're having a debate internally, just for the sake of it, not sake of it because we might go public with it, whether we actually list who are the 10 most dodgy owners in the country. We've got that data. I know who they are,
Oh.
and it's whether we go public with it and risk getting sued to death or not.
Yeah,
Well, if you can't afford the lawyer's fees, then I'd probably say discretion is the better
Luckily,
part of valor, as they say.
we're doing it with Transparency International, who have got a very robust legal team because that's what they do. So we're dwelling on whether we go public with it or not. So it is interesting.
Dot your I's,
They're
cross
not. They're
your T's
not.
first.
They're not a bunch of massive surprises at the very top, but I would honestly, for the sake of the wealth of the people on this podcast, perhaps not speculating who those people might be.
Yeah. Save it for your podcast now. Excellent. And there was something else, was there recently that you went to an event around football governance or the.
I've done a couple of events. I was at the FT's business event. Oh my God. Right. That was basically a load of rich millionaires and billionaires deciding on the future, talking about the future of football with the FT. I'll go through this just because I think it gives you a good indication of where the people who run the game are at. It was in, I got a free ticket because okay, like, I have to invite people that are kind of nice in football. It was at the
So
Hyde
they were
Park
sports
Overs.
watching themselves then.
Let me just go through this and you'll so totally get that picture. It was in a very posh hotel off Hyde Park, overlooking Hyde Park. You went into the reception, into the kind of lobby area. Obviously, it's one of those places with a pianist playing and nobody listening, right? That sort of stuff. You go through the lobby, through a big, like, revolving door into an inner courtyard. In this inner York card is a Lamborghini, a Ferrari, a Rolls Royce, and a load of very big blokes with necks the size of my chest, looking really muscly with sunglasses on, looking like, whatever. However that impression might give you of the
Were
kind
they
of
your
people you're
bodyguards?
going to, they were not, they were bodyguards of other people, weirdly enough. And you went through that and then downstairs to this room full of very rich, wealthy people talking about how football should be run and how they make money out of football. And I was sitting next to one of football's biggest, in the UK, biggest football economist, a kind of down-to-earth woman who clearly isn't of that ilk. And we were playing, what we do is kind of football bingo. How long until they mention fans in any of the speeches? And also how long until they mention working class sport, working class game? Fans did come up after about 45 minutes. Unsurprisingly,
45 minutes.
yeah, 45 minutes, about
amazing.
45 minutes. And then
Patronizing wankers.
the working class game obviously didn't come up at all. But like, we do it kind of just going on. It's just a bit of fun. I go there and basically brief loads of the journalists that are there and tell them to ask difficult questions. That's basically what happens. There were a couple of people that were interesting. The guy who runs La Liga in was there. He basically doesn't like the whole corrupt stuff. He's great and just basically says loads of really cool stuff and just loads of people get really pissed off with him. That's
No
great.
corruption in Spanish football at all, no.
Well, I can name many a country where it's really bad. He doesn't like Real Madrid or Barcelona, just out of point. So, that's where he's at. So, good guy.
I'm not aware if the media is to be believed that anyone outside Real Madrid and Barcelona actually likes Real Madrid and Barcelona.
That's Spanish football. So that's what I was at. And then I did another event in Parliament celebrating International Women's Day, which was awesome. With loads of football people who just talk about the issues of sexism in the game and stuff like that, which was great when you've got 25 different organisations. Most of the, like I think 22, 23 of them were women talking about the issues within that. And it's really eye-opening. So that was, good stuff. Lots of cool stuff that I'm kind of listening and hearing about. Just makes me want to change the world of football even more. Which is why I say all that and then realize that my vote can be swayed with an apple crumble in my hand.
Yeah,
Whatever.
there you are. Very, very cheap to corrupt. Excellent. All right, chaps. Thank you very much. That's brilliant. Hopefully people get a chance to get down to the Northampton game, which is on Sunday at 12. Thank you, Sky. Right, chaps. I'll see you guys soon with the same old Wombles. We're back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. We traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth.